You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org.
Good afternoon and welcome to Middle East in Focus. I'm Negwa Ibrahim. A delegation of senators, four Democrats and one independent, visited the U.S. military base at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, where the Trump administration has flown hundreds of migrants for deportation, and have said they were angered that they had to fly to Cuba for answers to questions they've been asking the Trump administration officials for months. The senators wrote, quote, "After examining the migrant relocation activities at Guantanamo Bay, we are outraged by the scale and wastefulness of the Trump administration's misuse of our military. It is obvious that Guantanamo Bay is likely illegal and certainly is a likely illegal and certainly illogical location to detain immigrants. Its use is seemingly designed to undermine due process and evade legal scrutiny," end quote. One of the senators, Senator Alex Padilla of California, said his biggest takeaways were that the administration didn't properly prepare for the operation and that the cost to taxpayers is, quote, enormous. In an interview with the LA Times, Senator Alex Padilla said officials could not adequately explain why the migrants had to be held at Guantanamo, not some facility in the United States. Now, there have been two separate lawsuits filed challenging migrant detention in these facilities at Guantanamo. In one case, a coalition of legal aid organizations is seeking a court order allowing detainees at the facility access to attorneys, including in-person visits. A second lawsuit directly challenges the legality of transferring migrants detained in the U.S. to Guantanamo. And court documents show that about 300 migrants from 27 countries have gone through the facility. Plaintiffs in both lawsuits are backed by the American Civil Liberties Union, ACLU. As of Friday, 87 migrants were held at Guantanamo, primarily from Latin American countries, 42 in a dormitory at the Migrant Operations Center and 45 at Camp 6 on a separate part of the base. Camp 6 is a medium security military prison at Guantanamo. On March 11th, the Trump administration flew 40 migrants held at Guantanamo back to the U.S. a few days ahead of a court hearing in the pair of lawsuits challenging whether it is legal to hold detainees there for civil immigration purposes. A federal district court judge in Washington, D.C. declined to block the administration from sending more migrants to Guantanamo. Afterward, the administration began actually sending more migrants there. Trump and other officials claimed, without evidence, that migrants reportedly transferred to Guantanamo since January are the, quote, worst of the worst criminals, end quote. But records show many were charged with minor crimes or arrested upon arrival at the U.S. border, and some have no records at all. Legal director for the Center for Constitutional Rights, Bahar Azmi, has said, quote, "As we know from decades of challenging indefinite detention there, Guantanamo has no purpose other than to project lawlessness, domination, and cruelty," end quote. The Center for Constitutional Rights and other groups such as the Center on National Security Law, led by Professor Karen Greenberg, have spent decades challenging the torture and indefinite detention at Guantanamo Bay of men and boys rounded up during the so-called War on Terror. So with us today to talk about how the War on Terror has come home in the Trump era with the ongoing existence, use, and expanded use of the Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility to hold detainees for civil immigration purposes is our guest, Karen J. Greenberg, the director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law. She's also the author of Subtle Tools, The Dismantling of American Democracy, From the War on Terror to Donald Trump, and is co-editor with Julian Zelizer of Our Nation at Risk, Election Integrity as a National Security Issue. Welcome back, Professor Karen Greenberg, to Middle East in Focus. We're always so grateful when you come on the show and really provide some insight into the situations happening at Guantanamo. It's very nice to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
And as you know, this is a show I've been trying to do for a minute, so I'm so, so grateful that we're able to do it today and really get to the bottom of what's going on and the illegalities of what's going on. In your most recent piece, actually one that just came out, you talked about the many ways the war on terror comes home in the Trump era. Now, one of those ways, which we're going to focus on today, and we'll bring you back for another show to focus on some of the other ways in addition to Guantanamo, but one of the ways in which the war on terror has come home in the Trump era is the ongoing existence, use, and the expanded use of the Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility. And we've talked a lot on this show about all the lawlessness with respect to Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility. And now we see the way in which that's further expanding under Trump. Can you first provide an overview on what the situation was at Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility at the end of the Biden administration and then right before Trump took office again in January?
Yeah, well, so thank you for that introduction. I think it's a good overview of what we're dealing with right now. So I just want to wind this back a little bit so you get a sense of what's happened, not just in the past few months, but in the past many years. That when Obama left office, because I think we need to see that to contextualize, there were 41 detainees held at Guantanamo. One had already been cleared for release and the arrangements had been made, and so he was sent out during the Trump administration. When Biden left office, there are now 15 detainees there, some of which, as you kind of asserted or hinted at, were released at the very end of his presidency, 11 Yemenis to Oman and a couple others that were released elsewhere. So, you know, that's what we have now. We have 15. Six of them have are in indefinite detention. Three of them have been cleared for release if a safe and secure transfer can be made for them that satisfies our national security officials and Congress. And the others are in the military commission system, seven of them having been charged and two of them having been convicted and still being there. So that gives you a sense of where we are now. And that's down from roughly 780 that were there at its, you know, greatest capacity. So that gives you a sense of what's happened since January 2002 when the facility was opened to hold war on terror detainees.
Okay, so and again, we'll have to do another follow-up show just to talk about those 15 that are still currently being held at Guantanamo and really get more in depth about, again, many of the illegalities surrounding that for those 15, both in terms of illegalities with respect to domestic law as well as international human rights laws. But today we're going to focus on how the Trump administration has expanded the use of Guantanamo to be holding immigrant detainees. So when Trump first took office in January, he ordered that an existing facility used to hold migrants in Guantanamo Bay be expanded to hold some 30,000 people. This facility used to hold migrants at Guantanamo, called the Guantanamo Migrant Operations Center, has actually been used by both Republican and Democratic administrations for decades, a practice long criticized by human rights groups, and I think a practice that many folks did not know existed even prior to Trump. Can you tell us more about this facility, how it's been used by other administrations, why human rights groups have criticized the practice of using it to hold migrants, and how the Trump administration's use of it compares to other administrations?
Sure, I can try to give you an overview. So let's just say that Guantanamo was originally established as a coaling station in 1903, but it wasn't until the 1990s that Cubans and then Haitians fleeing the overthrow of Jean-Bertrand Aristide were apprehended at sea while seeking asylum in the United States. And what happened was that there was this operation known as Operation Sea Signal, in which 50,000 migrants were detained over time in these vast, which you've probably seen pictures of, tent cities. And the conditions were dangerously unsanitary. Legal processes were slow to non-existent. And the treatment of the migrants was incredibly harsh.
And so, you know, the Clinton administration said they would process their cases for asylum. Most of the Haitians were returned to Haiti eventually. There were also Cubans, and they remained in legal limbo for a long time. But since then, since the 90s, the Migrant Operations Center has continued to serve as a holding facility for migrants that are picked up at sea. To give you some example, in 2021, the Migrant Center held an average of 14 detainees at a time. By 2024, last year, there were 37 migrants housed there, reportedly basically living in legal limbo, unsanitary conditions. And human rights group, well before the Trump administration, had weighed in with how deplorable the conditions were under the Biden administration. And these are individuals who were picked up at sea, who, what it's being used for prior to Trump coming into office was migrants picked up at sea that were brought to Guantanamo for processing to just have their hearings and then to be, in theory, returned to their countries or someplace else. But even then, even with whatever processes they'd set up, the conditions were just horrific, reportedly.
So, Professor Greenberg, before you move on, with respect to them being held in legal limbo, can you elaborate on that? In what ways were they being held in legal limbo at this facility, the Migrant Operations Center, that might differ from, you know, folks that are being held in detention centers here in the U.S.?
Well, there is a certain legal limbo about those who are held in the U.S. as well, but that's right. So it's not completely different from that, given what our kind of failed immigration policy in recent years. But when they were held there, the question is, you know, were they there? Were they going to seek asylum? Were they there because they were going to be criminally charged with something like being a member of a gang or drug or trafficking or something like that, a drug cartel or trafficking? And so the question was, you know, who was there? That's the number one thing. Did we know they were there? Did they have access to the kind of legal representation that they needed? And what was their future? And because, and this is sort of an extension of the sort of gray area in which our immigration policy has functioned for many years. It's a whole different order of magnitude than what's going on now when we talk about legal limbo. But to your point about legal limbo, whether it's the migrants that we're talking about now, or the detainees at Guantanamo Bay, there is a sense when you have indefinite detention from the war on terror detainees that, you know, legal limbo is a primary ingredient of indefinite detention.
And prior to this Trump administration, those who were being held there were always exclusively migrants picked up at sea?
As far as we know.
Okay.
Yes.
And then, sorry. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, no, that's right.
And then just one last follow up for, you know, what, and maybe you don't know the answer, but in case you do, what's the longest period of time a migrant has been held at this Migrant Operations Center in Guantanamo? Like what's
prior to
the Trump administration?
No, I actually don't know the answer to that question, and it's a really good one. So next time you have me back, I'll just make some phone calls and
okay.
See if I can figure it out.
Sounds perfect, because we will definitely have you back, as you know. You're one of our favorite experts on this show. Okay, so now let's move on to how has the Trump administration used now the Guantanamo Migrant Operations Center similarly and differently to other administrations?
It's really hard to say that it's being used similarly, because let's just start with the very beginning where President Trump said, we're going to bring 30,000 migrants there. Remember, we're going to build out this big structure. And, you know, it was just a mind-boggling number. Just to give you some comparison, in the 90s, when I was talking about the Haitian and Cuban asylum seekers and refugees that were there, one of the things that was clear was that at the most, at one time, they had 24,000, and the conditions were just, you know, substandard and at times horrific. And so the idea that you were going to build out 30,000 was just absolutely mind-boggling. And so, you know, just to start there, in terms of how it's different from anything that came before, the magnitude is one thing, but you're taking individuals from the United States to Guantanamo. That is unprecedented, as has been argued in the ACLU suits that you mentioned before. It's a completely unprecedented legal, you know, move. Or illegal move. And so it's sort of like something that needs to be really challenged in the courts. But the question is the Trump administration going to respect anything that the courts say as these suits, which are still pending, play out? So it's actually a very fragile period of time, not just in terms of the migrants, but in terms of the legal structure. I also think that, you know, and this sort of goes without saying, but I want to point it out, is that it's the symbol of Guantanamo as a place that can exist outside of legal parameters that, you know, existed when the war on terror detention facility was created. This idea that there is this extra legal, illegal place that could exist has not gone away. And so it became for Trump a way of saying, you know, we can expand this, we can exploit this. And by the way, we're just going to use this as a deterrent, perhaps, to others who might want to understand what could happen to them if they enter illegally, if we determine that they are criminals, et cetera.
Gosh, I have so many questions. I wish we had a full hour. So let me just one quick question on what you just said. So if Obama and Biden had in fact followed through on their promise to shut down Guantanamo, would this have been possible for Trump to do? I mean, would the law still be in place where Trump could just, yes, you know, reignite that law and allow for Guantanamo to be reopened?
It's a different law. They're not, I mean, I don't know. They're not, you know, most of them are in the migrant facility. Not, they're half and half, as you said, basically, you know, of the 87 that are there, half essentially are in the migrant operation center and half are in the medium security prison that's on in the, you know, war on terror detention site. But what enabled them to be brought there as war on terror detainees is a completely other set of principles and circumstances that relate to these people being brought there, the ones that are brought from the United States to Guantanamo. And that's what, it's just a completely other paradigm than we see even in the things I was talking about from the 90s, from the 1990s. No, this is taking people who are in the United States and placing them at Guantanamo Bay, which has become a symbol of sort of a black hole, as some have referred to it, where you can just put people and we might not know who's there. They might not have access to family or lawyers. We don't, who knows how long they'll stay there. And, you know, you saw at the beginning of the, at the beginning of this exercise of bringing hundreds there, they, as the suit started to come through in a sort of very challenging way, just before the hearings took place, for example, in a case that you mentioned, they would, you know, take people out of Guantanamo, right? So they've been playing cat and mouse with the legal system in terms of who's there, how long they're there, who's not there. But this is completely unprecedented and not based on the rationale that was used to bring war on terror detainees there.
And since you brought it up, I do want to get into the difference between the Guantanamo Migrant Operations Center and another facility at Guantanamo. I hadn't realized that. So one of the things that I had failed to mention is, one, there's the high security military prison, and then what I mentioned in the opening, the medium security military prison. What is the difference between all these different facilities? High security, yeah, medium security, and then the migrant operations center.
So the real difference is between the war on terror detention center, which has a number of different camps, and a number of which represent different prisons, some of which are still in use, some of which aren't in use, but it's always been divided into different camps: maximum security, medium security, and then the place notoriously that they held and interrogated and tortured individuals when they were being interrogated. And so we have different parts of the Guantanamo War on Terror Center. But then we have a whole other part of the camp that's called the Migrant Operations Center, which has really been, you know, on a low level, as I said, you know, having a few people here and there that are brought there by the Coast Guard when they're picked up at sea and waiting for their cases to be heard. And then, you know, sort of being sent home or wherever. And so it's really a completely separate entity.
Okay. And so actually, let me just remind everyone, this is Middle East in Focus, and we are talking today about how the war on terror has come home in the Trump era with the ongoing existence, use, and expanded use of the Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility to hold detainees for civil immigration purposes. With our guest, Professor Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law and author of Subtle Tools, The Dismantling of American Democracy from the War on Terror to Donald Trump, and co-editor with Julian Zelizer of Our Nation at Risk, Election Integrity as a National Security Issue. So now as a...
I just add one thing that I just want to say, because it's just one of those things. It's just interesting to know. Do you remember the very beginning of Guantanamo, the detention facility where they showed the men in cages and bent over? Do you remember those first teenagers, you know, in their orange jumpsuits? That was Camp X-Ray. Camp X-Ray existed because it was left over from the 90s. They used it because it was there for those refugees who were considered to do something wrong once they were there and therefore had to be detained in this sort of like, you know, quasi-prison setting. And so these cages still existed when the war on terror happened, and they revived them. And one of the weirdest parallels that happened was that the general who was in charge of the first detainees that came to Guantanamo Bay and therefore of Camp X-Ray, because that's where they all went at first when they didn't have a prison, was the same person who had been there during Operation Sea Signal as part of the command structure of those original detainees in the 90s. So just saying.
Well, you're bringing up an interesting point, which is, you know, and it's something we've talked about so much when you come on the show, is this idea that, you know, it's both with respect to the war on terror, but it's also with respect to certain aspects of immigration law, where there's this sort of legalized lawlessness that then allows for and creates the ability for the type of larger scale abuses that we see under the Trump administration. No?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's interesting here is that the distinction between criminal and civil issues. So, you know, they said, as you said, they were going to be the worst of the worst that were brought to the Migrant Operations Center. The worst of the worst is the term that they used for the detainees from the war on terror. So, the, you know, reviving it. But what's happening here, and this is happening also, this is where this ties into the use of the Alien Enemies Act that's been in domestic courts, right, recently, about, you know, deporting people, et cetera, et cetera. The interesting thing here is that, you know, there is no due process for any of these individuals, whether they're going to Guantanamo or whether they're being deported. We don't know that they're actually the worst of the worst. We don't even know who they are. We certainly don't know if they have any criminal records. And in fact, many of the names that have, you know, bubbled to the surface or been found out by investigators or been released have been people who there are no criminal records on. And so the idea that there's no categorization, there's no due process, there's no transparency about all of this is really very much a problem, and sort of what you were alluding to.
Yeah, and obviously we were not going to be able to get to it on this show, but as problematic as immigration laws are, and I mean, there are so many issues with existing immigration laws that I've always argued allow for certain levels of what I believe to be legalized lawlessness, where folks' basic rights are violated, but it's legalized within immigration law because of certain vagueness within the law. But having said that, even with that, there are certain actual, you know, constitutional rights and guarantees even for non-citizens, part of that being having the right to an attorney. I mean, even if you can't have a government-appointed attorney, you still have the right to an attorney. Yeah. You have a right to due process. And essentially, we see that being completely eroded when it comes to folks who are being sent to – migrants being sent to Guantanamo, as well as we see aspects of that also happening within the United States in immigration detention facilities here in the U.S. Having said that, though, Professor Greenberg, can you just briefly explain some of the additional deplorable conditions at Guantanamo that migrant detainees have been facing, in addition to being denied their actual rights within even immigration law, the right to an attorney, the right to due process?
Yeah. So, I mean, are you talking about the non-legal conditions, like the conditions they're actually living under?
Yes.
Yeah. So one of the things that that delegation of Democrats that you opened the show with, and I'm so glad that you quoted from it, because one of the things they found were the conditions that these individuals were living in, which, by the way, has been a problem, as I said before, in the migrant center continually, although for smaller numbers that have been there. And one of the things that the lawsuits argue is that this was not thought out ahead of time. And so the idea that there would be enough beds, enough places to put these people, that there would be sanitary conditions, that they could get enough medical care or food care or any of that, there was no preparation made. It was just done. And so the conditions are you know, anywhere between substandard and deplorable, depending on which aspect of this you're talking about. And so it's important that there was a visit that was made there. Whether or not it's going to make a difference, whether or not Congress can do anything or the courts can do anything, completely remains to be seen. Because even if the courts do something, will the Trump administration abide by it? Or will they just empty it out of those who are at issue now and think they can bring more people there in the future? And that's why these court cases are so important, because they're trying to get to establish parameters around what can be done and what can't be done. And most of what is being done, if not all of it, just defies any kind of legal, any kind of law, any kind of process, any kind of understanding, even as fuzzy as our immigration laws are. This is outside of that.
And actually, since you mentioned the courts, we're going to dive right into this last question, and we'll just have about a minute and a half for you to answer. There have been two separate lawsuits filed challenging the migrant detention in these facilities at Guantanamo. In one case, a coalition of legal aid organizations is seeking a court order allowing detainees at the facility access to attorneys, including in-person visits. A second lawsuit directly challenges the legality of transferring migrants detained in the U.S. to Guantanamo. Like I mentioned in the opening, court documents have showed about 300 migrants from 27 countries have gone through the facility at Guantanamo. Can you provide some insight into these two lawsuits? What are the legal basis for their claims against the Trump administration? And what's the current status of these two lawsuits?
Okay, so first of all, these issues are still pending in the courts. In terms of the access to lawyers and also access to family members, which is argued, you know, by the ACLU and other NGOs, advocacy organizations, you know, what they're saying is they need to have access to these lawyers. But what Homeland Security has said is, well, we've started to give them access to lawyers, but we don't actually know who's getting access and who doesn't. And that is still pending. And in the other case that they referred to, which is basically challenging the sending of these individuals from the United States to Guantanamo, they're challenging that as having no precedent, as violating due process, of having of violating the INA, of, you know, sort of as actually in violation of the law, and saying that, you know, there is no right on the part of the government to be able to do this. Now, that doesn't say that Congress couldn't establish some kind of right, but right now that does not exist. And so it's such and what that suit is trying to get at is the degree of difference of anything in the past from taking people in the United States and transferring that to Guantanamo. That never happened in the war on terror. That is not That is not how the migrant facility has run either. And so this is such a change in terms of the use of that naval base and its detention facilities. And so, you know, we'll see what happens with these cases. And we don't know yet.
And INA, for folks who don't know, is the Immigration and Nationality Act. This is Middle East.
Oh,
no, it's okay. I talk in acronyms all the time. I have to remind myself to tell folks what the acronyms mean. So I do it. I do it, too. This is Middle East in Focus. We have been speaking today about how the war on terror has come home in the Trump era with the ongoing existence, use, and expanded use of Guantanamo Bay Detention Facility to hold detainees for civil immigration purposes with our guest, Karen Greenberg, Director of the Center on National Security at Fordham Law. Thank you so much, Professor Greenberg, for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Margaret, for having me.
I would also like to thank our fantastic engineer, Ozzy. You've been listening to Middle East in Focus. Thank you, all the listeners, for supporting us every week by tuning in and financially supporting us so we can truly be independent. Our theme song is the overture from Summer Night's Dream by Marcel Khalife. For KPFK Los Angeles, I'm Negwa Ibrahim, wishing you all light, love, and peace.